welcome to another podcast with So Legal. Today we've got the pleasure of bringing our friends and also people that we work very closely with, Tom and Adam from Century Advice, Century Wealth, and also the Property Investments podcast, Century Group. Yeah, actually, do you know what? They're going to conquer the world soon. Adam and Tom are good friends of Jamie and myself. But also, not only that, they're very professional, they know what they're talking about, they're very into property, very into business, they're great IFAs, great advisors. And
just great everything, really.
Oh, jeez. And I'm a guitarist.
You're a guitarist?
No, I'm a drummer.
I'm a drummer.
No, he's not a musician, he's a drummer.
Yeah. Come and join us.
So legal, man. So legal, man.
Yeah, it's good. I'll keep it that.
I can dip any time.
Do you play the musical instruments, Tom?
I do.
Oh, you do.
I was going to say so rudely, but no, I don't know.
Edit. No, today we're going to just talk about what these guys do, how we interact with them in the work that we do, how we work with them, and obviously projects that they have coming up. As with all of our podcasts, it's quite lucid and fluid, so there's really a plethora of things that we'll talk about. So, Tom, do you want to introduce yourself and we'll go from there?
We can.
This could take a while. Actually,
how much time have we got? So, yeah, my name is Tom Webster. I'm the managing partner of Century Advice and the Century Group. My main role is to grow the group and make sure that we're giving our clients the best service and all the different possible products they could possibly need. I've been in financial services for over 14 years now.
You do only look about 14.
Yeah, that's well. It's pretty much since I got out of the cradle, really. It was a family business. So I worked for my dad when I was younger. Unfortunately, that business went under when it was the recession, as a lot of people did.
Yep.
Then I went into IT recruitment for a bit, sold some email marketing software for a bit, did club promotion for a bit. So I was out there with
£2 ripples.
but I actually run the nights, and that was so much fun.
Do you feel that experience actually taught you a lot about sales and business and marketing?
Yeah, massively. Because you are in the cold face of it, and rejection is every five minutes.
Yeah. But you're used to rejection anyway.
Oh, okay. Yeah, one in every 100 rejects me, so I'm getting used to it. Definitely. And a big one for that was networking. It was keeping in touch with people, again, giving them the service, making sure they're having a good night, and then following up and seeing if you can get back to the nights after. So, yeah, definitely cut your teeth on that.
I've got to say, actually, I think the experiences like that, if there are any young people that are listening to a podcast from a law firm, amazing in the first place, but actually, I think that experiences that you have when you're younger, especially when you put yourself in the real nitty-gritty work for minimum wage, I think it gives you a lot of substance, actually.
Well, there's good money in club promotion, because I say I was out of the street, I was running at night, so I wasn't really doing the leaflet jobs and stuff.
You honed your skills in the sales, because after the first 100 times of doing something in a particular way, and it honed itself into, and I have to say that when we get new instructions, I think, and that's probably the same with you, you know how to speak to new clients and how to make them feel confident in what you're supplying as a service. And that all comes from probably even your club days. You learn a little bit there, you learn a little bit
everything.
And there's a certain pattern as well. So if you've done, say for example, you only really need to do something 5 or 6 times, then you start to know what works.
Yeah.
So,
a bit done. Just blag it 5 or 6 times. Yeah. It starts to come together.
It's the same with your drumming, really.
And then after that, that's when I think I was about 23, and an old client from the mortgage days was coming up to retire and wanted me to take over his business. So a chap called George Playell had a fantastic business, really good reputation, been an IFA for a very long time.
How'd you end up with the club?
Because I'm the best in the best. No, because again, it comes down to giving him a good service. So when I was working for my dad, I was on the Halifax desk, and obviously Halifax being the biggest mortgage lender, I'm getting a lot of volume, and George was mainly prime mortgages, so it was a lot of the stuff was clean would come to Halifax, so he was by far the person I would spend the most time interacting with. And he always really appreciated the service that I gave him, and then he wanted to make sure that his clients were receiving that level of service that he received, which was obviously really flattering, because 23 years old, taking over a business that's been around at that time had been around for over 12 years in its form that it was. So then I took over that business. Probably took me 2 or 3 years to really get my head around it, get shape it how I wanted it, and sort of take it from a paper-based business to a like paperless office and all those sort of things. And then I'll segue over to my esteemed colleague to my left. and then Adam got in touch with me, must have been 2 and a bit years ago.
Yeah, feels like forever ago, but yeah.
You're welcome.
were you mates before or not?
Yeah, we knew of each other before. He used to like me, I don't know. his wife Christina was an old friend of mine, so I've known Christina for years and years, and obviously know Adam through Christina.
Sort of friends of the same friend group, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And then so Adam approached me because he was working for an IFA at the time, but was thinking about setting himself up and wanted some advice and stuff like that. I said, look, I've got the business where I need it now. My next phase is to really push it forward and grow it, so let's do it together.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically had the same aims, same objectives in the same town. We might as well team up and do it. And then the plan was we aimed for 3 offices in 3 years, so it's like really aggressive on growth. That's what we're aiming for. You know, if we're going to go for it, might as well go for it while we're young, in inverted commas. So set ourselves a business plan and put some targets there.
So you put your place in Meads and Eastbourne?
Yeah, that was the first high street. Yeah. So at the time we had an office in Forest Row, which is like a bungalow on like a farm sort of estate sort of thing.
Right.
But that's when me and Adam joined forces, that's when we wanted to explore the high street and put ourselves in sort of the public domain. So Meads was the first one, then a year later we opened East Grinstead, and then a year after that we opened Darkfield, which was just October this year. So in 24 months we'd opened 3 high street offices.
Where's your busiest place, would you say?
It changed actually, didn't it? Well, obviously, you know, at the time when there was only the Eastbourne one.
Yes.
But for a long period it was a real busy area in East Grinstead. So it was partly because the guys that are up there, so one of the chaps that sort of manages and looks after that office up there for us, he was really active with all the introducers and stuff, so there's quite a bit of a buzz on that.
Yeah.
And it's a busy town anyway. Not that that's really dropped off, it's just I think the other offices have sort of caught back up there.
Upfield's a great market though.
Upfield's great. I love it.
Interesting story about Upfield, how we managed to get an office there. And as with everything, we're so legal, and I'm probably the same with you. Things just happen without you having, it's almost like it was written in the stars. So Jamie and I had agreed a deal to take a lease in Brighton. And hopefully the landlady that was going to give us a lease isn't listening to us. Maybe a chance she is, but she was nutted in a box of frogs.
Yeah.
So she used 3 different lawyers in the transaction. And then at the last minute on the day that we were supposed to sign the lease, she pulled out and said she wanted to rent to a tech company. So, I mean, she had a tenant there waiting to sign.
Wow.
$25,000, $26,000 a year rent. And then she just said, no, prefer a tech company. Because she wanted to be able to get rid of them in 3 years. And obviously we needed a bit more security. We couldn't just have somewhere for 3 years and then be turfed out.
Yeah.
So we went to meet these agents in Oldfield Smith. And Jamie and I parked up.
Is it Richard?
We parked up to go and meet them for lunch. And as we were walking down the high street, I said to Jamie, I said, God, it's busy here, isn't it? It's a really nice high street. We literally walked down the road, went to meet them in the village offices. And I said to Bernie, I said, oh, do you know, I didn't realise Upfield was so busy. I don't have a car, you see, so I don't really travel a lot. It's wherever there's trains, I go.
And well, there's a train now.
you've got to go to Victoria.
And it's once a week.
And I turned around to Bernie and said, oh, it's really busy in Upfield, isn't it? What a great, you know, really good market. There's only other 2 other law firms. He said, yeah, you guys should have an office here. I said, oh, yeah, that's not a bad idea. But it's funny that we've got an office available upstairs because they own their own office
block. Yeah, yeah.
And they had the top floor available. So he went, do you want to have a look at it? I went, yeah. We went upstairs and he went, how about this? You gave me some price per month, all inclusive. He said, we can do it on a roll in 1 year. There and then we shook hands. We hadn't even had lunch.
That's
7 minutes into our meeting with him. And this is about an hour after being told that the Brighton meets had fallen through. We were dead set on going to Brighton. We ended up in Upfield. It's been a brilliant, brilliant journey there.
So our target was Lewes originally. So we were looking at offices there. Yep. And then we only went to Upfield as a bit of a sanity check just to make sure we're not missing a trip and stuff like that.
Yeah, because Lewes is so expensive.
Upfield was like
But as we were saying earlier before we started, you know, I mean, I grew up in Upfield, so now I'm very fond of Upfield, but it is such a massive conurbation now, really. I mean, expanding hugely Upfield. I mean, thousands of houses down at Ridgewood or whatever, expanding there now. And it's a great thriving market and still a nice place to be, I think.
Oh, definitely. From what I gather, the town council at Upfield really understand business.
Right.
So the rates aren't ridiculous because we're paying exorbitant rates in East Grinstead.
Yes.
And then, so the rates aren't ridiculous. You get the 10-hour free parking, which is helping people that got to work in the town.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of towns, they miss that trick. They think about tourist trade or people going in to do a bit of shopping, but they forget that people have got to work.
There's no town if there's no businesses open and stuff.
So you take Eastbourne, for example.
Oh, it's so
you've got what, 2-3 hours parking in the town centre? So where do you park? So then you've got to park somewhere outside in the residential area, which then annoys all the tenants, and you've got to walk 20 minutes into your office. I just got to take my hat off to them. I think they've really, really looked after businesses, and that's shown because then you've got a busy high street.
So tell us about the look and feel of your offices then. If someone walks into your office,
it's funny, it's like a modern twist on a classic.
It's a new twist on an old classic.
Yeah, so
some of the photos I've seen on Facebook, you just put Ash photo out there.
Bringing the outdoors in.
Biophilia. We've done it with the Eastbourne and Upfield office. We need to renovate East Grinstead at some point. We've got like a living wall. But just something different, isn't it? Because the amount of sort of offices you can go in, especially like branches on the high street,
you need
people to be impressed when they walk in, something to talk about. But when we very first opened Eastbourne, one of the best compliments we got was people would walk in and say, "Is this a part of the chain? Are you a part of the chain?"
Yes, it is.
Yeah, we've got multiple offices. Because at the time we did technically have two, so yeah, we've got multiple offices. but I've always, because I do all the marketing and all sort of the look and feel and everything, and we've spoken about this on our podcast before.
And I said all the real work.
Yeah, you do actually. You actually make money and I just make things that are pretty. but I wanted that impression. I wanted people to walk in and feel comfortable and confident that it's a business that knows what it's doing, because we give away the sort of the feel that it's bigger than what it is.
And certainly presence from the internet, and then that's all tallied up when, say for example, if you went as a client to each of the individual offices, you know you're walking straight into the offices.
So you've got a brand that's
definitely, and it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy as well, because if you give the impression that you're bigger than you are, then all of a sudden you're filling the shoes that you've created for yourself, and that's what I feel like we've done over the last 2 years is
manifestation.
Okay, well, that's a good word.
So, thank you. What would you say is the biggest impact on your business at the moment? I know you've expanded. I think our journeys, So Legal and Century, are quite linear, actually. They correlate quite well, but we've expanded very quickly. And in the same period you have as well. What would you say your biggest issues are at the moment as a business owner, be it legal, be it staff, whatever?
Yeah, challenges, really.
For our industry, it's really difficult to find good advisors, mainly because there aren't many good advisors out there, unfortunately.
And the ones that are particularly good at everything, in terms of like mortgage advice and stuff like that, they're already comfortable, they've set themselves up. So it's a real hard draw to get someone to join and then get into the vision and then,
But the team that we've got at the moment is fantastic. Like we're really happy with what we've grown and all the guys have got their individual specialities. But it's really difficult to get to this part. And then for us to push forward and take more brokers on, it just becomes more complex. And then as it goes, we're at a really awkward stage of growth where we're big enough to be big, but not big enough for me and Adam to take a step back from looking after clients on a day-to-day basis and then run the business at the same time. So we're sort of that really weird cross-section. So it's a bit of a job. It's like having two jobs, really.
Yeah, I feel the same with Jamie and myself, actually. We're desperate to be able to divest some of the responsibilities that we have, and you do as a business owner, you end up doing things like hoovering the landing sometimes.
Oh god, yeah. We're mad at times.
When was the last time? The other day, there was a dog poo on the entrance into our Eastbourne office,
who went out and got a bit of cardboard and flicked it out into the road. You know, so, you know, I want that noted in the history, by the way. But, you know, you can't expect other people to do that. But I do get what you're saying. I think that we have the same problem, and that's lateral hiring is very difficult in the legal profession. I think there are a lot of lawyers, and this is not disparaging the profession. I think quality is one thing. Some are very good, some are not as good. In terms of, you know, there's a plethora of different aspects to being a good lawyer. But, you know, some are great at finding work, some are great at grinding the work through, some are good at just, you know, plodding along, and they're consistent. And to find people that are a mixture of all three of those things and actually, you know, really want to build a career, I find that it's a lot more difficult. I don't know what you think, Adrian, now in our profession, it's...
Yeah, but it's, I mean, all professions change, you know, they change a lot over the years. And I mean, I've been in it longer than you, a lot longer than you, actually, but but the changes have been gigantic, really.
Have you seen much change in tech?
Yeah.
Because I think the financial services and the law profession, I think we have a very parallel industries where tech isn't forthcoming. I think we're getting there, fintech's getting there, legal tech's getting there, but we've definitely been the slowest industries, I think, in picking up tech.
Law is changing. I mean, we're part of law tech.
Yeah.
And you guys should actually come to the lab one day, up in Notting
Hill.
We've got an office there, but it's also a co-hub only for law tech.
Yeah.
So it's not, no one else can come into it. The residents have to be approved by the 12 law firms, of which we're one, before they actually go to get residency there. I mean, I've seen things such as there is a piece of software that's been developed that hasn't actually been developed. It's about to go to market, I would imagine, with one of the big major law firms, the international law firms, where it will look at a 300-page document. It will analyse the risk factors for the client and give a breakdown within a nanosecond of all the interpretations. So lawyers, I don't think human lawyers may exist in 20, 30 years. They will.
They will be different.
But yeah. They will be. Sebastian that's doing the podcast.
Obviously just qualified as a lawyer. What do you mean, not 20 years?
Things will change. I mean, there's a statistic that Barclays gave us. I may get this wrong, but I think it's 80% of all jobs now won't be around in 20 years.
AI is unbelievable.
But it's incredible. But also there's an opportunity there, not just for people developing AI, but also people to retrain. And, you know, I don't want to bring the B word into it, but Brexit's a great opportunity, I think, for Great Britain and the schooling system and education system in this country to reinvest in the future industries, which is going to be AI, machine learning, maintaining these machines. These machines still need to have a human input. You know, we've just developed a website plugin. So the plugin that we've developed, I've had a minute.
You've personally been coding. You've been up at night in the dark room.
But basically, it fills 80% of all our inquiries through a decision tree machine learning chatbot. So the chatbot basically will, as a human would, deal with the inquiry there and then with the client, give them an estimate while they're on the chatbot, email that estimate to them, and then email our head of department for each department to say that that you've given this estimate. Because law is changing to fixed fee a lot of the time, or fees that are quite within a range that you won't really be able to go above.
Yeah, I mean, the point about using tech in that way is not to dehumanise, but it's to, you know, kind of tap into the speed that people demand now, particularly amongst millennials. The desire is for immediate response, and I think all of us struggle with that idea of a full email inbox, being able to respond, you know, instantaneously. And I think that's where AI and tech is massively helpful. It doesn't take away the human element because, following on from that, of course, you know, potential clients get a call and they speak to a human being. But I think the change in both of our industries is the machine learning for the routine tasks, as you described.
That's exactly so.
But then the human element on top, which is something that we look very critically at.
You're always going to need the human element. So, I mean, before the internet, law... And everything as a whole like that, it was always you had to go and see the person who's done all the study, that they've got the knowledge, and the knowledge was the power type thing.
Yeah.
And then you put the internet there and all of, you know, the
knowledge
is available to everyone. It's a massive
funny story about that as well. I've got a lady, she was a client of ours, and
I advised her on, it was something to do with her lease tenancy anyway, and she said, can you tell me whether I've got a right to stay? And obviously UK law has certain acts, such as the 1954 Land and Tenant Act. I went back to her and said, this is what you need to do, this is the law. And actually, I actually didn't even charge her for this. This is before, this is the inquiry stage.
You are.
And I didn't, you know.
Do you sure you're a lawyer?
Sorry, I'm off piece there. Bill her. I was just like, this is the law. If you want me to act and assist, then please let me know, etc. And she came back and she said, you're wrong, that's not the law. I found this on the internet. How have you got this so wrong? And my response was, it was brutal. It was like, dear, I'm just making her Angela, I can't remember her name. Was. That is the law of Victoria State, Melbourne,
Australia,
no. Northern United Kingdom, is as I set up below. But actually, it is true, you know, every nutter can go on the internet.
Oh, we get it.
And type anything they want about anything, you know, blogging now. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
Even podcasting, any nutter can set up.
Yeah, any crazy person can buy a couple of mics and just go.
You're big on your podcast, aren't you?
Massive. They are the second biggest. Here's a little plug in for the point. They are the second biggest property podcast in the world.
Thank you. I think that might be a slight exaggeration, but that can't be right. But we chart a lot, so yeah, the property investors podcast, and it does we do tend to float around into the top charts. We do really well in the business and the investing charts. We've had some fantastic guests on that recently. We've had Russell Quirk, the chap from eMove,
founder and CEO of eMove.
So as you know, so eMove had a bit of a fall from grace recently in October. 10 years the firm was around, raised £29 million. Merged with two of the other biggest players in the market and then collapsed about 3 months afterwards. So Russell's really sort of open and honest and told you all about that story. And then we've got some really exciting ones in the pipeline as well, some TV names and all that sort of stuff. So it's one of the weird things that you, like, as you guys know, you start a podcast, you don't know where it's going to go, you don't know who's going to listen, and then it's just taken off, really.
It's just gone from there, yeah. Just put it out there, and we're thinking no one's going to listen. And then suddenly, you know, we're getting loads of listeners, we're getting loads of responses, we're getting, you know, people wanting to come to us, which is like really.
And from a business point of view as well, it's actually helped us generate new inquiries.
Well, it's humanising it all.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's, we are just regular people. We just do a job that we think is of value, but like, people just want to hear people talking about what they do and interacting and just being, you know, but like they are, just average people.
It's encouraged people to get in touch with us and say, you know, I really like the look of some of the stuff you talk about, some of the things you're doing, how can I get involved? Or, you know, I've got some money to bring to the table, can we JV on stuff? So it's presenting opportunities from us, not from a selfish point of view, it's just that's the word. Don't know what the word is.
You don't do words as a drummer, do you?
All my drummer friends are going to come beat me up. Phil Collins. So, as we always promise, our podcasts aren't going to be very long, so I want to leave.
You cut us off. You'll be boring you, Ahmed. Got more important things to do.
Can I ask you two questions before you go? One, what do you think is going to happen to the market right now? Because obviously we're in a state of flux in the United Kingdom, and I think that for whatever you voted for, it's really unacceptable what Parliament's up to at the moment.
I think as a country, as a collective, we can all agree that Parliament's let us down. Whether you're Leave or Remain, they have just embarrassed us as a nation.
They have.
I think the biggest problem we've got is you've got Parliament doesn't want to leave, and you've got the EU doesn't want us to leave. So you've got these two opposing forces that both agree on something that we don't agree with.
Yvette Cooper is the greatest example of this. She had a 68% or 69% Leave vote in her constituency, but she's determined as an MP to keep the UK within the EU.
That's just disgusting. That's a basic mockery of democracy.
Well, democracy's dead. I declare this with aid. We have chats about this. Democracy's finished now. The Brexit's proven democracy's finished, and perhaps it's time that we need to change it and bring it into a more localised democracy. So why doesn't East Sussex have its own parliament?
Well, this independent group seems interesting. You know, the splinter, because they, from what I gather, the idea of them is that they are all independent MPs working as a collective, but
They lack a centrist party, and they've identified that the central, a movement towards the centre would actually make them more appealing to the public. But actually, they are the most self-serving. The seven or eight MPs that have gone out, I mean, it's the greatest hits of nobodies, basically, in their parties.
I like Chaco.
Do you?
I do. I tell you what, it's really bad, because everyone's going to disagree with me, but I'm a bit of a Blairite in regards to, if you actually look at his parliamentary and what he did for the country, take the war aside, he improved the NHS, he improved the education system, low crime rate, good economy, blah 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 blah. And I think if David Miliband would have got the heads up rather than Ed Miliband, I don't think Labour would be in the mess it's in today. So I think he had the right politics in regards to that centre.
However, he did also start tuition fees. One, he also declared.
But then I don't have a thing against tuition fees. I think if you want to further yourself as an individual, that's your personal position.
But it's a sign of a progressive society that allows youngsters who are capable and able to go to university. What he did was wrong.
But then
opened university up. He said 50% of all 18-year-olds should go to university. It's absolute nonsense. 50%. So basically, you had. You know, I think it was the University of Cornwall or somewhere over the West Country, had like a degree in David Beckham studies. What is something with a degree in David Beckham studies? Yeah. Honestly.
I know, I'm with you on that. But then that should be his choice and he should have to pay for it. If he wants to study about David Beckham, then go for it.
However, somebody's
studying
mathematics or engineering or aeronautical engineering.
Well, I would say, where I will side with that opinion is if you want to be a teacher. If you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a nurse, if you're going to do something for the public good, then yeah, I do agree that your education should be free. But if you want a career in a certain industry, it should be on your head to do that. When I went and got my exam to do my IFA, I'm not expecting you to pay for it because I want to be an IFA. It's the same as I don't expect to pay for you to become a lawyer.
Yeah,
you can't disagree with that.
I accept that, okay, but I'm talking course that very
well. Yeah.
That wasn't my question, by the way.
Maybe we should do that podcast and then political debate. I reckon you can go for it.
That wasn't my question. My question was, what do you think is going to happen to the economy during this period? You know, how to see the property market? You know, I didn't expect you to start kind of
forget
the war.
Go on, Anthony. You give the serious question. I'll get off my soapbox.
On the property side of things, in the grand scheme of things, I don't actually think a lot's going to happen. I really don't think a lot's going to happen. If you think when the referendum first happened and you know the vote came out to leave, the first reaction was actually interest rates went down. Everyone's like, oh, this is going to go crazy. And then, you know, nothing really changed and nothing has really changed.
The pound disappeared.
In the immediate effect.
But the footsie
wasn't. But it wasn't like a massive, massive change.
And it recovered.
And all that's going to happen now in terms of property is people are just sort of buying their time and it's just a bit slower.
It's a good time to get a deal. Like we're experiencing.
There's uncertainty.
It's the uncertainty that's
crippling most people.
Yeah, I think I'd consider it a black cloud. I don't think it's stopping. I don't think it's changing. I think at the end of the day, everyone needs to go to work, earn money, enjoy themselves at the weekend. That's not going to change post-Brexit. And I think as long as there's nothing catastrophic that comes out the other side of it, which I can't see why there would be. Well, just personally, I don't think it's going to change. I don't actually think Brexit's going to happen, if I'm really honest.
No.
I think it's going to delay.
It 2.5 years ago on Facebook, I'm trying to find my post. Yeah. Brexit won't happen.
It won't happen. Because the people that have the power to make it happen don't want it to happen. Therefore, it will not happen. Unless everyone was on the streets. And even though a million people turned up.
This was a party political broadcast.
A century party.
That's got a ring about it, hasn't it?
Do you know what, right? We'll look back on this podcast one day. You know those dystopian films from the 80s, like Terminator, and there was the guy who invented the first robotics, and he became the richest guy, and then the robots took over. This is what we're seeing here.
This is the beginning of Sky. This is the beginning of Sky.
So that was your
century game.
What was your second question?
Question was, what if people listening wanted to use Sentry, what would you say your core areas are and how you can help them?
So our biggest area that we're really focused on is lifetime mortgages. So mortgages for the over 55s looking to release equity. You're in that bracket.
That's me.
Oh,
that's
money. But yeah, releasing tax-free money from the home. So equity release had a really bad reputation, late 80s, early 90s. Regulation is now really heavy. So whereas I'm regulated before, now you're regulated by the FCA and you're regulated by the Equity Release Council. So they're actually more protected than normal mortgages. But they are changing people's lives, aren't they, these type of mortgages? You've got people that are retired, they can't afford to eat, but they've got stacks of equity in their home.
Yeah. And that's the bulk of our clients, where you see in terms of lifetime mortgages, is it's such a nice, effectively, tool to have.
Yeah.
You know, where you can say that your pension didn't perform, your endowment wasn't really there, you know, whatever it is, you aren't in the position you thought you were going to be.
Yeah.
And now suddenly, you know, with longevity, people living longer and stuff, you think, well, they've got nothing except they go back to their sort of 500 grand house, which has got no mortgage, and they're scrooping by day to day. So it's just a case of unlock some of the equity in that house, and you know, you sidestep some of that equity into other properties. So you're moving it from like a dormant asset that you can't really do anything with, and you're putting it into income generating assets. So, you know, quite often advise along those basis to replace income. If you think, oh, I'm never going to be able to retire because I've got a pension, I haven't got anything, you know, you can buy multiple properties, certainly up north, that are like really high income yields, and you know, before you know it, you can be sort of 3-4 grand a month in the plus.
Yeah,
and then you can retire.
And having a debt is also helpful for inheritance tax.
Yeah, so you reduce your estate as well under the threshold.
So lifetime mortgages are big ones.
I think it's good. So golden questions now.
Yeah, you had a golden question for us.
Golden question. The best gig you've ever been to?
Oh, that is a good question.
I saw John Mayer live at the O2, which is...
I don't know.
John Mayer's meant to be, he was really good. It was just, yeah, the musicianship was like absolutely amazing. And I saw another band called Brother Strut, who were a funk and soul band, but it's just, we were right, you know, it was a tiny, tiny little venue.
Yeah, they're the best gig.
Yeah, another similar one as well. So I'd probably say the best gig I've ever been to was at Ronnie Scott's in London. So it's like the jazz club, and a band called Tower of Power. Have you heard of it?
No. So it's just reading off every gig you've ever been to.
I'd say, yeah, Tower of Power, because they've been in a band for like 40 years together, and the same guys, so they've done it 40 years, so they all know exactly what each other are thinking, and they just counted each other in, and then it was like listening to a CD, like they were just so
on it.
They were so tired.
It's a lovely venue, that, as well.
Yeah, it's a lovely. It's Tom. Nice.
So me, so I'm a
British Spears.
Yeah, no, but she's great. No, I like festivals. I like festivals and big events. So rather than gigs and stuff like Adams into, I'm into sort of the bigger productions. I went to the Space closing fiesta. So obviously Space being around for however it was, institution in Ibiza. I went for the very, very last time there. And then festival as well, I enjoyed Creamfields was a good one, from what I can remember of it. Yeah, Firefest was fantastic. the accommodation was stunning. Have you seen that
before?
Oh my god, incredible.
Adrian? No. What? Best gig? Yeah.
Best gig?
We could be here for hours.
Well, did you go and watch Adam's band?
Yeah, that's the best thing.
The best gig?
Yes, I should have seen it. Yeah. I went and watched the Riffs at the White Lion pub in Sydney.
I went to see it. Well, Queen was the first band I saw when I was 15.
Okay.
So that has to be my best gig.
Yeah, you win.
There's no way.
You win.
At the Brighton Centre.
If I've been to Tenerife, you've been to 11 Reef, haven't you?
Up with some really nice gear, you've gone Queen.
Thrown it, dropped it. I was going to go with Brian Adams.
Go and get your train.
This podcast officially over.
Yeah, you just won the podcast.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks very much for coming in.
That's nice.
Hello, you lovely people. Just to note that this is a podcast and does not constitute legal advice. Should you require any specific legal advice based on anything, then please contact your solicitor, or even better, us, and we can advise you fully.